how many water towers are actually in Hell's Kitchen?
Ooh, nice.
Okay, there should be one every four blocks because Spider-Man uses them for web swinging too.
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah.
Greetings and welcome! This is Channel LOLNG beginning its broadcast day. Today, the Gentlemen Nerds examine superhero shows on the boob tube. From The Flash to Peggy Carter and Gotham to Daredevil, they're all here on our very special television superhero presentation. Now, let's meet the nerds. Mark Finn.
Space Ghost!
Mickey Finn.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice...
Aaron DeOrive.
Shazam!
And I'm Joseph Fotinos, your MC and emotional touchstone. Well, gentlemen, here we are gathered again in the Lobot Lounge. I've got the first round of drinks coming, so let's get into it, because, my God, what an amazing time we have right now. What an amazing time we live in right now when superhero shows are... just everywhere on television.
I was just thinking the same thing, Joseph, and I'll tell you what's significant about this. We are all old enough to remember when we were grateful for what we got. And now there's literally been a sea change in that we can decide at what point we want to stop watching this because there's so much of it.
Yeah.
That's great.
It really is. And there wasn't – I mean – I don't want to say that there was a plethora of choices back in the day. I mean, you had your Batmans and your Supermans. Those are staples. They're going to be there. But we didn't have the rare that we have now. I mean, let's face it, Arrow. I'm going to start with Arrow. It was one of the first launch here on the CW, kind of embracing this whole DC universe. And Arrow got a rocky start, but it was Arrow. It was Oliver Queen, who basically is... Batman, kind of. I mean, he's a rich guy, shipwrecked on an island, he learned how to use a bow and arrow, you know, and he came back to Starling City and he, you know, was sort of their Batman. And how to make that interesting, and I think they did. I think they made it very interesting after season one.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I'll go one step further and I'll say that I think it is because it is that strategy itself that I think created success. If they had done a Superman TV show, a Batman TV show, a Wonder Woman TV show, I think those very iconic characters are better left for movies, for the theater. And instead, let's explore characters like Green Arrow, The Flash, you know, the minor characters.
The street-level character.
Exactly. And I think that is why suddenly now these characters that people didn't know very much about, they knew they existed, they knew they were somewhere in the Justice League, but the Flash TV show is doing phenomenally well. They're doing gangbusters, and they're going on to their fourth season, I think.
Third, they're still on the third.
Yeah. And doing fantastic. I mean, I just finished binge-watching the second season of Daredevil. And I was very, very pleased. I will say that season one is still my favorite, but I'm that kind of guy. I tend to like the first part of things the most. You know, Star Wars is my favorite movie. Batman Begins is my favorite of the Batman trilogy that Nolan did. Fellowship of the Ring is my favorite of the three Lord of the Rings movies. So I think just the creation, the setting up of the world, the introduction of the characters, that's when everybody seems to be full of energy and it's fresh and it's new and it's exciting. So I do prefer season one of Daredevil. I think it was just, it's a tour de force. It's a fantastic show. But season two certainly doesn't disappoint.
And we should let the listeners know that there are no spoilers.
Or if there are
spoilers, they'll be minor spoilers, which we'll worry about.
We may do spoilers for other TV shows that have aired for months and months and months now, but season two of Daredevil is way too soon. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about general impressions and feelings, but we will absolutely not spoil anything that happens in the plot.
Just as a quick side note, did you say that you preferred Star Wars over Empire?
Yes, I did.
He's not the only
Star
one.
Wars. Yep, Star Wars is my favorite film of the
trilogy. Empire's excellent.
I believe that Empire I believe Empire is a better movie. It's better. It's a better structured story.
Granted. I'll give you that. Okay.
But Star Wars introduced us into that universe, world, those characters, and so.
Now, I disagree with the structure, because that whole ending, although great, messes with structure. So.
Right, yeah, true, but they were going for that. Yes. They wanted the cliffhanger.
Okay, so. I digress. I didn't mean to get us into Star Wars again. All roads lead to Star Wars. Yes.
Can I propose a structural theme for how we do this?
Okay.
Absolutely.
Let's break it up into, because I think it's just easiest if we talk about DC, Marvel, and then the independents or everything else.
Okay.
And we need to talk about 20th century and 21st century, because mm-hmm. there's a sea change that happens in 2000, essentially, right after The Matrix, is when superhero movies suddenly became possible. And around that time is when Smallville – it was actually before them, but it picked up. Smallville mm-hmm. was the start of Warner Brothers characters – or excuse me, DC characters on the Warner Brothers small screen. And so, yeah. And so Smallville has kind of been the template for the DC television shows.
Now, what about Lois and Clark? Wasn't that WB-produced?
It was in the 90s,
right.
And it suffers from the same problem that all of the other superhero TV shows, with the exception of The Flash, had. And that is to say, the emphasis was on how quickly could Superman get there to untie Lois from the chair every single week. His superhero stuff was limited to the one or two times they bounced bullets off his chest or had him lift something that was very heavy. But it was really more about the relationship.
That's right. It was more about Clark Kent than it was about Superman. Yes, he was Superman, but he was also and charmingly handsome Dean Cain.
No doubt.
As Clark as well. I thought that was interesting, though, because I watched the show, and I didn't watch it religiously, but I certainly watched a few episodes. But what I enjoyed about it was that it was at a time when Superman in the comic books was going through the whole Lois Lane courtship, and they timed it, or they tried to time it, where they would get married on the show at the same time as they would get married in the comics.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he died before they got married. But they just put it on hold for a little bit. He came back. But
right.
Yeah.
No, but I see what you mean, Mark. I think the format, the style, the feel of the TV shows that the CW has on right now, I think that absolutely did begin with Smallville.
Yeah.
That sort of gave them their formula.
Yes.
And Arrow feels like it was made by the same people. Flash feels like it's made by the same people. It has the same general format and guidelines and such. So
right.
I do think that Lois and Clark is of the older generation, what you're calling 20th century.
Yes.
And I do think that Arrow and Flash and Gotham and Daredevil and all these are 21st century. And there is a definite difference.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you can tell with Arrow and Flash because they all feature recessed lighting.
yes, very true.
So, and it's not a bad thing, but it's very difficult. I don't know how many people are actually listening to this who are under the age of 30, but there was a time when not everything in the world was connected to a computer, and if you wanted to, I know, and if you wanted to do things, I know there was a practical consideration to all of it. In some ways, it's one of the reasons why TV's Flash show from 94 was so well thought of, because they were spending $1 million an episode to do the running effects. And up until that time, it was amazing. Of course, they were borrowing heavily on the template that Tim Burton set down with the first two Batman films.
Right down to the rubber muscle suit, which I'm so glad is gone.
Yes,
the rubber muscle suit.
Yeah, Central City was a very kind of a never win sort of a place, where there were modern cars and Art Deco buildings, and it worked.
Although I actually was a fan of the Flash suit from the 90s show.
I always thought he looked too bulky to run. He looked uncomfortable, and he couldn't turn his head. He had the same Batman disease where I can't turn my head because it's all armored and bulky to make me look bigger.
See, for me, this was a case of, I remember when Reb Brown had a clear Captain America shield that snapped to the front of his motorcycle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
to help him with the wind shear that his giant-ass Captain America motorcycle helmet generated. What?
Right.
What, Mark? I thought that wasn't in the comics. You're right. It wasn't in the comics, and it looked stupid. I was so happy for that Flash suit. It was because it was the costume. It was the costume with no apologies, and I was so happy about it.
And then that short-lived Spider-Man TV series, I don't remember that, of the 70s.
Nicholas Hammond.
Where Peter Parker and his incredible blow-dried hair.
Yes.
I used to remember as a kid watching that going, how when he puts his Spider-Man mask on, how come his head is on all bulky like? Because he would take the mask off and he has this huge, almost Afro-like hair.
Well,
and he puts
the
mask
on.
The
goggles.
It must.
From the eyes.
It must.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember seeing that, and they had just tons of that stock footage of him, you know, wall crawling up the building when he's obviously attached to a cable.
Yes.
I mean, you can't do those things. I mean, I understand they had to make do with what they had, and some of them came up with some fairly inventive stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, and the show, I mean, we were watching a documentary about the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk, with Bill Bixby, and, you know, the success of that show. Is that they didn't approach it like a superhero show. The creators of the show said, this is not about a superhero. It's a drama, especially one that appeals to women, that happens to have a big guy, a guy that turns into a big green giant monster in it. And that was very successful. I mean, incredibly successful for the time.
And a precursor to the current thinking with the Marvel movies.
But they started blending them together because they actually had Thor and Daredevil both show up in the Incredible Hulk TV show.
Oh,
I know, you remember that. And let's face it, the Incredible Hulk TV show was nothing but a sequel to The Courtship of Eddie's Father.
Right. Yeah, it was Courtship of Eddie's Father meets The Fugitive.
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was always great because, you know, you knew you were going to get two Hulk outs. And one at the halfway point and one near the end, right?
Yep.
I loved the music at the end. But my favorite part of the Hulk was when he got to meet Lou Ferrigno. And they did an obvious split screen and also a forced perspective to make the Hulk look bigger than Ferrigno, which was probably the critical zenith and, dare I say, also the critical nadir of the series. It was certainly better than the first attempt at Daredevil. And this is what's so funny is when you have this kind of longevity, you remember when Marvel on TV was just the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
You know, David Hasselhoff as Nick Fury.
Yeah.
Strangely, one of Hasselhoff's best roles, despite the fact of how ludicrous that is.
I loved Rex Reed as Daredevil.
Right.
And, of course, what's funny about that, you know, at the time, they dressed him like a ninja and put him in a blindfold. And the reason why they did that was because Stan Lee and Marvel was so desperate for the legitimacy of getting this stuff out into another medium that they basically signed away a lot of creative control. And so the first time Stan Lee, you know, visited the set, they said, well, what do you think? He goes, it's great, but where's Daredevil? He goes, that's Daredevil. Why is he wearing black? Well, he's running around at night. We thought that'd be better for him to blend in into the darkness. Okay, I can see that, but how come he's wearing a mask over his eyes? Well, he's blind. Yes, but they're not supposed to know that. And you know, he laughed about it in Stan's soapbox. But I'm reading this and going, oh, you're kidding me! Come on,
they sent you out to Hollywood.
In season one of the new Daredevil, he wears black and has a thing over his face.
Look at the influence that had on Frank Miller when he started writing that character. He basically said, you know what? He would run around in black with a bandana wrapped around the top of his head. And it's a great look in the first season of Daredevil. It's actually a really good look
for Dread Pirate Roberts look.
And of course, they were even talking about in one of the making of clips of, like, you know, how ridiculous would it have looked if we just put him in this bright red suit with horns, I mean, he would have looked absolutely ridiculous.
And thank God they changed the suit this season.
Yes. The suit, and by the way, the suit, from what I can tell, will continue to evolve.
Awesome.
Over the next several seasons, it's always going to go back to the Gladiator. He's going to keep working and on it and giving him new gadgets and shit like that. So,
Melvin, which, by the way, that guy, one of the things I love about the writers on this is that they don't keep characters stagnant. Yeah. When he was being oppressed, he turns into a bit of a loon. As soon as you know, Fisk is gone and everything like that. Yeah. This is a minor spoiler, but he's acting like a normal person now.
Yeah.
And then until he picks up the buzzsaws, and you're like, oh, put those down, buddy. And for those of you who aren't familiar, that character Melvin, he's in the Marvel comics, he's the executioner, right?
No, the gladiator.
And he's got these buzzsaws on his hand. On his arms, and they spin, and he fought Spider-Man a few times, and Daredevil.
Yeah, and Daredevil, yeah. I love them working into the story, all those little minor characters from the comics, and again, without spoiling too much, watch the second season.
Yeah.
There are nods to Jessica Jones, there's nods to the first season, there's nods to other minor characters. And you get to see a great, this is not a spoiler, but you get to see a nice little trailer for Luke Cage at the end of season 2.
And actually, one of the major minor characters in the season of Daredevil made her first appearance in Jessica Jones.
I would,
Reyes.
I would say, in fact, that Marvel is about to be on track to very quickly catch up with what DC is doing in their current bid for TV supremacy. I think they've done two things. They've got two things working for them to their advantage. The first thing is they're on Netflix, so they have the advantage of being a little bit more mature, and that certainly helps if you're going to tell Marvel Knights stories about Jessica Jones and so forth. The other thing that they have going for them is they're walking a path that DC, by way of Warner Television, has already tread, and they know that what made Arrow the breakout success was the introduction of Barry Allen in the second season of Arrow. When the notion that there was going to be a possibility of the Flash, and then we get to see his origin at the end of that Arrow episode.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden, Berlanti, I think, realized, Greg Berlanti, the showrunner, had realized he had a tiger by the tail, and he could develop huge chunks of the DC universe
and take characters that people had no clue and say, oh, you know what? It's going to be Solomon Grundy.
Right.
You know what? I'm going to use this. I'm going to take these. I'm going to take, you know, Deathstroke and make him, a standout. I'm going to take the Black Arrow or whatever his name is, Malcolm Merlyn.
Yeah, you know.
Mm-hmm. And we're like, okay, these characters, I know them. The names were familiar to me. I'm like, okay, I know he's a bad guy. I remember that guy. But then I'm like, well, I've known nothing about him. So it was fun to discover these rare side characters through this show.
I don't know if you guys heard this or not. It's apocryphally thought that Berlanti actually pitched a Batman television show.
Yes, I have heard that.
Warner
actually,
Brothers.
I heard that on this podcast.
Yeah.
And they said we can't do this because he's locked up for the movies. He says, all right, how about Arrow?
Right, exactly.
And so all of the Batman stuff is filed off. You know, all the serial numbers are changed.
Yeah. It's interesting though when you think about it, because Superman, Batman, you know, the heavy hitters, the A team, if you will, they are reserved for the movies, and so TV hasn't been able really to touch them. Although they're starting to get really close. I mean, in Supergirl, CBS's Supergirl, we see Superman's feet, and we've seen the back of his cape, and we know he's there. He's a presence. Jimmy Olsen can call him on his signal watch, and Superman shows up in seconds to save the day, and then fly away before we can see his face.
Well, for that matter, and even in the movies, I don't know if they're going to do anything with the Suicide Squad beyond the movie, but in the movie, Batman makes an appearance. He's fighting the Joker in Suicide Squad.
Wow.
So I think they're learning. They're learning, whoever is in charge of DC, I guess Warner, that look at what Marvel has done. Look at what Marvel has done and how excited people would get when, you know, the Sith from Thor would show up on an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Samuel Jackson, you know, would make a brief appearance as Nick Fury. And I mean, you know, that it matters. It matters to the fans.
To the point where they brought Constantine in from another network.
That was the coolest thing.
So good.
It was great. It was great. So that connectivity, I think, really rewards fans of the comics that have been reading this for years and years and years, but it also shows new people, new fans, that there is this whole universe out there, and all these characters interact, and they all know each other. And so it gives it a greater scope.
I should say that as of the third season of Flash, there's a multiverse of characters. They've already established that this Supergirl Flash crossover that's about to happen is Flash traveling to Supergirl's world. So they don't exist in the same continent, in the same
I thought they did.
It's a dimension. Well, they for obvious reasons they can't, right?
Right. Cuz there's going to be a different Flash in the movies than there is in the TV show.
And I guess that's how they're going to explain it, you know, which is fine, but I think DC, here's where I'm very critical of what they're doing. I think they, as yet, they've got a lot to prove. And this whole plan for a Justice League series leading up to these films is a laudable goal, but they couldn't make Green Lantern work at a time when there were really great examples of how to do this. What they made was a superhero movie. They didn't make a police procedural that happened to take place in space. They made a superhero movie, and Green Lantern should have been a police procedural that happened to take place in space. And that's where Marvel's got it over on them, and I don't know if we're even going to see that with the new movie, but the TV shows Berlanti with Arrow and Flash is playing the long game, and he's seeding all of these characters and introducing them and then backing off. And the fact that he's got his hands in two different networks and four different shows is significant, because while it's not my favorite path, I think all the shows are a little more soap opera-y than I would like. Mm-hmm. They're still very enjoyable. Flash more so than Arrow, and both of them more so than Champions of Tomorrow, which is
the Legends of Tomorrow.
Legends of Tomorrow, which is very much Berlanti's tryout piece for Doctor Who, as far as I'm concerned.
We tried to get into that, and we didn't last 5 minutes because of the dialogue.
it's not as well written, obviously, but what I do like about Legends of Tomorrow is the idea that, wow, Vandal Savage?
Oh, I know, right.
What?
And Rip
the
Hunt?
Hawks?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're diving deep. They're digging deep. I mean, and Vandal Savage is a character that, and I didn't quite understand how that worked, but they could kill him, no spoilers, because he comes back. They could kill him every single episode, and he rises again because he's an immortal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I was like, really? Is that how that works? Because if you...
Yeah, I knew very little about Vandal Savage.
I knew he was a caveman, a literal caveman who touched a meteorite, and he got super smart and super strong and immortal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially, that's his origin.
That is pretty much it.
They've updated it a bit.
Yeah, because he was an Egyptian.
Yes.
Essentially, in this one, who got him his immortality to whatever reason.
Yeah, I wanted to like the Legends of Tomorrow.
It's got a great cast.
And we watched the first two episodes, but there was just something that wasn't quite gelling for us. And as we pointed out at the beginning of the podcast, you know, for better or for worse, we do live in a time where we can decide not to watch this superhero show and watch this other superhero
instead. That's true. We can pick and choose.
And ironically, Legends of Tomorrow had much better trailers than any other DC show.
they were promoting the hell out of it.
It looked the most like we were going to see a Justice League style team up book, you know, in TV form. Now, again, you know, maybe we're just not the target demographic for this. Maybe it's doing well. I'm not real sure. I don't really have my pulse on it. I'm watching it half heartedly because one of the things that he's doing Berlanti again, is he is not afraid to name drop. He's not afraid to throw concepts out. In the first or second episode of Flash, he introduces Simon Stagg, who is the millionaire that owns or sponsors Rex Mason, Metamorpho, the Element Man, one of my favorite DC characters. On a and on a list that shows up in a in an episode a little bit later than that, you clearly see Ralph Dibny's name, the Elongated Man, another one of my favorite guys. And I'm like,
but even
oh,
when they did, when they did Simon Stagg, they even brought in Sapphire Stagg, they even brought in Java,
and they brought in Java, right?
His manservant. I mean, these are characters that are, that I've known for years. And seeing them realize like that is exciting. Now, mind you, I think a lot of that was a kind of a throwaway, and they fall into the villain of the week, you know, because it's a TV show. You have to kind of follow that pattern. And, oh, who's this new guy? Let's figure him out. Let's stop him. He's gone. He'll be back.
Which is one of the reasons why Netflix has an advantage, because it's designed for binge watching, not for getting you to tune in next week.
Right. Yeah. Less episodic and more just like a long,
it's a very long
movie broken
that,
up into
exactly
episodes. Now, Legends of Tomorrow got my attention immediately because of one man, and that was Wentworth Miller and his portrayal of Captain Cold.
I know. Isn't he great? Yes.
He is fantastic, and he was great on Flash, and he's wasted on Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah,
and I'm really sad about that because I love that. And I want to see him back on Flash.
Yeah, hopefully he'll get back there soon. I agree.
He embodies that character so well because he's almost got this strange code, and that's Captain Cold. That's the way that Leonard Snart is. He's got that strange kind of code. Don't kill unless you have to, folks. You know, let's do our job. Get out.
Yeah, he's weirdly a Silver Age style supervillain in that regard.
Yeah.
But he is in no way, shape, or form the guy in the blue parka, right? You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's what's cool about it is that they managed to find a way to make these characters legitimately interesting and also to a degree believable. Captain Cold and Heatwave, I think, rock. They're my of course, they're my favorite rogues if you're going to be a Flash guy anyways, but I love the fact that they have fire and ice style personalities. Mm-hmm. And they're not as smart. They're not equally smart. There's a level of I'm the guy running this gang. You're just the hired muscle. That's so genius. It's a brilliant interpretation.
But even Len Snart, with all his I'm the boss, he's still basically a thug. He's still a thief. He's a very good thief. But essentially, he couldn't invent this machine that gives him his name and his power.
Right.
He had to steal it.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't. There was a robot chicken gag that always makes me laugh when Mr. Freeze encounters Captain Cold, and he was like, "How come everyone has a freeze gun? It took me 20 years to think of this. How come you high school dropouts have one? Where did you get this from?" Right? Just, you guys stole it. That's what. And I've got this cool blue parka now.
Blue parka. No,
I stole it from Dr. Herb.
Right. Most of the Flash villains, I think, have been a joy. Gorilla Grodd, just have
so
been
good.
Such a joy to watch. You know, I always thought that a lot of Flash's villains were goofy. They were lame. And, you know, this last season of Flash, oh my gosh, Zoom is terrifying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Zoom
is
down right.
Yes, that's
I catch a little bit of Flash because shows that I watch wind up being after it, so the first 2 minutes on my DVR is the end of a Flash episode.
Right. Yeah, no, he is very, very well done. I mean, I thought, oh gosh, here's another speedster, you know, it's going to be dull. No, Reverse Flash was very scary and very different. Zoom is scary and different.
And why is
he
called Reverse Flash?
They sort of gave him the moniker.
Okay, so he doesn't run backwards or anything.
No, because he was yellow. He had a yellow suit with red highlights, whereas Flash has a red suit with yellow highlights.
Yeah.
So they call him Reverse Flash.
And one of the characters has his penchant is to name these characters. He kind of gives them their quote unquote nicknames. You know,
who's great? He's my favorite character. Yeah, absolutely, my favorite character.
Right, and so he's always free. He takes great pride in giving them their names.
Yeah,
their super.
Yeah, he's a geek like we are, and so he sits there going, "Let me see this character," and he comes up with a great name. And every now and then he'll come up with not a great name, and somebody else will come up with a better one. He's like, "That's good. That's good.
I'll take that one." That's good. Yes, and so we have Arrow, We have Flash. We have Legends of Tomorrow. We talked about Supergirl. We touched Constantine briefly. A terribly wasted show. I thought it was really good. So I was sad to see it go, but it's nice to know that the character can still pop up. So that was fun.
Yeah, he pegged that role. The only problem with his performance isn't his performance; it's the costuming. They got
his tie that goes down to his navel.
No, they got the costuming so right that they didn't want to ever change it. His tie askew was always the same tie askew.
Yeah.
And literally, he has it. He loosens his tie, and it goes all the way down to his navel. I'm like, why even bother wearing a tie, Constantine? I mean, really, what you're going to strangle yourself on that thing. What are you doing? No, but it's brilliant, and he's a great a great embodiment of that character. But I want to laser focus real quick. See what I did there? Mm-hmm. I want to laser focus real quick on Gotham, because here is a show that I didn't think was going to last. I thought, you can't have a Batman show without Batman. Who's going to watch that? Who's going to care about
the
that?
The same people that read Garfield without Garfield.
Right?
Yeah,
and
no, me.
Right? It was Sally Forth about Sally Forth. No, and it works. And it works. It's interesting. The characters are compelling. I absolutely adore Harvey Bullock. I think he is fully realized.
I've always loved that actor.
Yes.
Donald Logue.
I miss Terrier.
He does a great job as Bullock.
But to me, what really grabbed me, and that whole first season was dedicated to him, was Oswald Cobblepot.
Yes.
They created a very realistic, believable fall from grace, rise from the ashes, tormented character that embraced his namesake. That at first it was an insult and he hated it. But then later seasons they said, they call him Penguin, and it strikes fear into people now. And he's even commented, it's grown on me, you know. He is so compelling, and that's the best part about any villain in any TV show, any movie. The villains make you watch them, and absolutely you are compelled. Even Nigma, even Edward Nigma, the Riddler, who will become the Riddler, he got off to a rocky start, but even he now is fun to watch.
There's a great supercut of him out
when
of
they
the
put him together.
Of people telling him to shut up when he tries to ask questions.
Asking riddles, yes.
Oh, and it used to kill us because, you know, we watched the show and my son would always comment, he's the smartest man in the room and no one's talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
They're just dismissing him. Yeah, whatever, yeah. Eddie. Go away, Eddie. You know?
Yeah.
So if they just turned and asked him, he'd probably figure that out. But no. You go away, Enigma. You're weird.
And the thing is, what I love all the things that Joseph mentioned about the show, and we watch it religiously. But, you know, if people are not understanding that this show is also about Bruce Wayne, not about Batman. Mm-hmm. It's about a young Bruce Wayne, and you get to see him becoming that. You know, I mean, we all know Batman. We all know Batman. We've watched several versions, many movies, dozens and dozens of animated movies and shows and such. But
parents being killed over and over.
Right.
Over.
To see this young actor embody this role and sort of slowly becoming the character that we all are familiar with is a fascinating choice for the producers of the show to do this. And, you know what? Let's see what this guy was like. What was a young Bruce Wayne like? What was he like in school? What was he like growing up? Did he have a sense of humor? Was he this little morose kid that walked around emo all the time? I mean, what was he like? Was he smart? And they're answering a lot of those questions. He found out that a spoiler is coming for Gotham if you haven't seen it. But he finally confronts the character that would have been Joe Chill. He confronts the character that killed his parents. Young Bruce Wayne, he's got a gun, he walks in there, and the conversation that takes place is probably some of the best writing that I've seen on that show.
Later on, tell me what episode that is, so that I can go find it.
I won't tell you what happens, but suffice to say that the young man that walks in there, ready to avenge his parents, and the young man that walks out, you're like, There he is. Batman is forming. Batman is starting to form. You can see it very well.
And see, I want to like Gotham. I even tried to watch it again today. The problem is it is beautifully cast. I absolutely adore the showrunner. Geller is the guy who did Rome, did The Mentalist, He's a fantastic showrunner. They fell into the Batman trap.
Which is?
Everybody's interesting except for the central character.
Oh, you mean Gordon.
Gordon and Barbara are so freaking boring. They're so and they're center stage, so it's like you spend the entire time that they're on there waiting for somebody more interesting to show up.
I would recommend you keep watching it. Okay. Barbara becomes something completely unexpected.
Okay.
Absolutely unexpected.
Yeah.
Gordon, however, I think that's just the virtue of any kind of character like that. He is the central character. Everybody else around him is very colorful. I mean,
there's plenty of shows that don't have to have the straight man as the center.
I know. But I actually find Gordon very, very compelling, and I find him a very interesting character. Mm-hmm. And he's also very complex. He's made some decisions mm-hmm. that left you going, whoa, hey, that's right. Gordon? So watch the show.
Okay.
It really is it's worth it to see him interact with
– I'll check with you and see what I can skip to because I've made it as far as the fourth episode.
Oh, yeah.
You need to watch. Yeah. Yes. There is so much more ahead of you. Season two is, I think, where really things start to ramp
up. Unfortunately, that's not available yet. So.
Okay.
And Sean Pertwee as Alfred and
relationship
he has with Bruce.
He's great.
Some of the best.
It's impossible for Pertwee not to be good in something. He's shown in Dog Soldiers. I mean, come on.
His Alfred is a badass.
Yeah. How I perceived of Alfred, but I love that his version of Alfred.
And one last note on Pertwee that's not superhero related. There is a Hellblazer movie, a Hellraiser movie out there, one of the ones that's completely spin off in the low budget films, where he is excellent in it.
Okay. All right. But so Gotham, thumbs up. I've praised that show many times on this podcast, and I cannot say enough. Watch the show. You make it past the first 4 or 5 episodes of the first season. It's finding its leg.
I'll do that if you watch a couple more episodes of Powers.
Oh, God, that first one was so bad.
The first one is bad.
That first one was so bad.
Now, tell me about
however,
Powers,
it has
Vicky, because I know nothing about that.
The best anti-characters in it, that side henchman that teleports with people's heads.
Right. Powers was a comic book that was written by Brian Michael Bendis and drawn by, I forget what the... Michael Oming. And so it's essentially... The premise is a guy that used to be a superhero and had super strength and flight.
He was Superman.
Has lost his powers,
but
he still wants to be involved in fighting crime
and
all that.
DC or Marvel? Where does this come from?
Independent.
Okay. And where is this show on?
Sony. It's a PlayStation Network show.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. I actually had to get on my PS4.
PlayStation has a network?
Yes.
Yeah. Believe it or not.
It's the only show on their network.
Yeah, it is.
But
anyway,
it got renewed for season two.
He has become a detective that it specializes in taking cases involving superheroes.
Yes, the Powers Division.
It's the Powers Division. Correct.
All right.
I bought several of the collections of the comic book, and I enjoyed them tremendously.
It's a police procedural in a world of superheroes.
that's exactly correct.
The villain in the first one, there's two villains, but the big bad scary one is a serial killer superhero.
You can still find them. They're still collected. Who Killed Retro Girl is the first one, and it's great. It's
actually second season of.
It's very, very well done as comics go. It should have been a slam dunk, no brainer, easy peasy thing.
But it's Sony.
Because the superheroes are not center stage.
Yeah.
You know, the heart of the drama is the police procedural and how are you effective as a crime fighter if everyone around you has laser vision? And so the whole point is it's about, you know, who you are and what you are, and it's him dealing with his past, and it's about his partner trying to break through this hard outer shell. And I mean, it's all the stuff that's in a good police procedural. And apparently, I've not seen the TV show. I've only heard horrible things about it, and it makes me so sad because I love the comic.
You have to treat it like it's a low budget thing because it is. It is the anti Daredevil as far as production values go.
Well, for one thing, I'm not on the PlayStation. I don't have a PlayStation. So
it's out on DVD now.
But life's too short to watch something that it's just going to piss me off. I've got Dallas Traffic for that. I don't need to watch a show and be like, here's all the ways you got it wrong. That is very 1993. If I wanted to do that, I'd go back and watch Generation X or Birds of Prey again.
Yeah, for some reason the first episode looks like that, but the rest doesn't. My wife, who's a big fan of Bendis, actually liked the show, and she's the one that got me to start watching it. So I guess opinions vary.
It gets better, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It's still not. I mean, Daredevil, Jessica Jones blows it away, but there's stuff in there that's cool with the character interactions, and I'm always a sucker for a good anti-hero villain.
Right.
Yeah. And you mentioned Laser Vision, so I'm going to use that as a segue to talk about the newest kid on the DC block, Supergirl. I've seen a few episodes of Supergirl. I haven't watched it religiously, but what I have seen, I've enjoyed. I've enjoyed her performance as Supergirl because she has that aw shucks kind of sweetness that Supergirl needs to have. Plus, they've touched on some very interesting characters. Martian Manhunter, John Jones himself, has appeared on the show, and in full-on Martian look. There's no, they don't shy away from it.
I've actually seen that scene.
Yeah,
I haven't watched the show, but I've seen that scene.
Right, but I mean, it's Martian Manhunter on CBS.
Yeah.
How cool is that? Right. What a world do we live in?
Same thing with the Red Tornado and
Yes.
And Maxwell Lord, who was one of my favorite latter day DC supporting characters.
And we've got to see a Bizarro or a version of Bizarro on the show, which was fun.
I have not seen that. That's one area where I am very sorely lacking. I have not seen a single episode.
She is adorable.
Of Supergirl. And I want to.
She really is.
We just don't have cable. Yeah. And so we just rely on Netflix, Amazon Instant, Hulu Plus, and they don't get CBS shows. Or at least not that one.
But CBS wants you to send them money so that you can see the shows on online.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I actually did fork over the subscription for the purposes of watching the show. And I have to tell you, I find it very much a mixed bag. Part of it is that I don't think I'm the target demographic for this. And I'm cool with that. I really am. I also feel like if they are aiming at a younger crowd or trying to appeal to women, I'd like to see them be a little bit more sophisticated about it. Because it's not even, and there's still an awful lot of I'm pining after the boy I can't have.
Right, a lot of crushing of him.
And not a lot of, I don't need a man to define my femininity.
No, remember this when we get to Daredevil.
I'd rather see for Supergirl, which, one of my favorite things that I saw before the show came out was that shot of her walking surrounded by Girl Scouts. And some of the Girl Scouts have Supergirl capes on and... Yeah. And I just thought, I felt like that should have been the show right there. There was a scene early. There's a scene that happens in the Red Kryptonite episode, which is the best episode that they've done, where she flies down and has a very brief conversation with a girl who's getting bullied, and I think I wanted more of that. I'm okay with it not being for me, because it's, again, not the only show out there. I mean, I'm more than willing to diversify all of this. And if they want to make a show aimed at young teen girls, I say go for it. We can't have enough soldiers in the army, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. And you know what? Like with a lot of these shows, that it may be still finding its feet. It's still in the first season. I think it has to hit its stride. And again, I say this not having watched a single episode, but I watched lots of episodes of lots of seasons of Arrow and lots of seasons of Gotham, or at least two seasons. Maybe they'll get there. Maybe they'll start to understand.
Yeah, it got. They ordered the last batch of episodes to finish out with a season of 24.
The back nine, okay.
Episodes, yeah. So it, there will at least be a full and complete single season, if nothing else. Now to contrast that with the rather limited amount of Marvel television we've gotten, I have to say, I still come down in favor of what Marvel is doing. As much as I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I fully say this with love and respect. It's the Silmarillion of the Marvel Universe. Okay.
Oh,
it is.
Why do you say?
There's that? A ton of backstory that's interesting. That informs the movies. That is timed to pop when the movies come out, so that you have all this extra cool information. That's such a slog to get through, and there's times where you're like, geez, would you just hurry up already?
They took the concept of webisodes for TV and did a TV version of that for movies.
And so, you know, there's a lot of concepts that they're playing with and really developing with nuance. Right now, what's happening in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the half of the last season and all of this season has been about essentially the Inhumans. And so the whole idea is to set up the Inhumans and turn the supplant the mutants in the Marvel Universe with Inhumans. The Inhumans will be – they will occupy the slot that the mutants once had.
Yes.
And so
– because they can't use them. They belong to a different company.
Yeah,
the movie rights belong to a different company. Marvel –
I don't even think they can use the word mutant.
Marvel could make comics if they wanted to. But that would only be supporting the films of a company – that they don't want to make films anymore, and so
didn't Marvel just announce that they're canceling the Fantastic Four?
It's been on the chopping block for a while. Fantastic Four, all the mutant books are going away. Anything that's currently under a licensed contract to another company is going to be suspended until they can get it all back under one umbrella.
Yeah, because you can't get rid of X-Men. That would just be tragic.
And unfortunately, the Deadpool movie made $11 billion, and so
that's right.
I'm sure that activated the clause for the second one. But in any case, as much as I like what they're doing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's a slow burn. It's for those of you who would rather read the official handbook of the Marvel Universe rather than read the Avengers comics. That's right. What Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is for you.
You know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had that. They had the character of Ward, who was the and small spoiler. He's sort of the big bad, a former Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. who goes bad and lasts multiple seasons.
Yes.
Even when we think he's dead, he keeps coming back. For the longest time, I was hoping beyond hope that what we were getting was the origin of a character that I love in the Marvel Universe, the Taskmaster.
Ah, right.
I thought he was going to end up being the Taskmaster because nobody really knows the Taskmaster's origin very well. It's rumored that he was an ex-S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
Right.
And I thought, oh, this is going to be so great. This is going to be so great. And they didn't go there. And I was really kind of disappointed in that. And I haven't watched an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for several weeks.
I'm surprised that they have not introduced more characters. I mean, I've seen Crusher Creel, the Absorbing Mother.
That.
And that's about it. Yeah. I mean, none of the Inhumans that they've introduced are familiar to me.
No,
I don't recognize any of them from the comics.
They're not right now, but they've also done some stuff with Agent Carter that's going to pay off down the road. Now, the Agent Carter series is everything that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not. It's fast, it's awesome, and it is absolutely something I would park women and children in front of and go, okay, here's some superhero stuff that you've got to get behind.
Love Agent Carter. Yeah. Blythe and Elena both absolutely love Agent Carter.
Which leads me to this, because while DC is not doing it, DC is ignoring their cinematic counterparts. Marvel is embracing them.
Yeah.
So we have characters like Peggy Carter, who started in the movies and now has her own TV show and appears in movies still. We have the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. characters, Agent Coulson, who's reacting, who started out in movies and now has his own TV show, and they react to things that happen in the cinematic Marvel Universe on the small screen, which is brilliant.
Yes.
And even the Daredevil and the Jessica Jones of the world, the Netflix shows, play in that galaxy, in that universe as well. They talk about the invasion from the Avengers. They talk about the Battle of New York. I mean, there's even in Daredevil, there's a mention of a Daredevil's father, who was a boxer, going up against Crusher Creel, who appeared in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on TV. I mean, they're doing this jump back and forth, creating the cinematic and, I guess, televised Marvel Universe. which is very exciting. And they're doing some amazing things there. So let's take Daredevil. Let's just kind of talk about him for a little bit. For those of you who are listening to the show and have not seen Daredevil season one or season two, highly recommended. It's a wonderful superhero show. It's not for kids.
No.
Absolutely not.
So let's keep that in mind.
And if you've been on the fence about Netflix streaming, let this be the thing that pushes you over, because the plans are to release more of these things. And if you like what Marvel's doing, if you've liked most of the movies, or even if you're getting a little tired of the big, large, action-oriented set pieces, mm-hmm. you like the Marvel Universe, but maybe not the super event stuff. Let me humbly suggest you give Daredevil a try. In their ongoing mission of, we're going to make a good movie that happens to have superheroes in it, Daredevil is a mob story that happens to have a guy in it with superpowers.
Right.
And now season two, you get a lot more choreographed fights and everything like that. But season one, they get clever with it. There is an infamous hallway scene in the second or third episode where... A lot of the fight you don't see. You just see it spill out in the hallway continuously as one long, beautiful shot.
Yeah. Glorious.
It's a great
It's a great fight scene.
It is
a
fantastic.
And I do love, and in fact, I'm wondering if there's anything, because right now, of course, DC's, I don't know that it's a disadvantage, but the thing that's maybe keeping DC back a little bit is that they're still dealing with the networks. They're still dealing with either the major networks or... some of the cable networks, but you know, Marvel smartly enough went to Netflix, or I don't know if Netflix went to Marvel, and they said, you know, it's no holds barred storytelling.
It's an integrated package, yeah.
Right. We can tell any story that we want to tell, no matter how violent or brutal or sexy or whatever it is. Give us your stories. We're going to do them. And so they're doing Luke Cage. They've done Jessica Jones. They've done two seasons of Daredevil. They're going to do Iron Fist. I mean, it's like they take all of these great street-level characters, what comic book characters are called street-level crime, mm-hmm. and they're making entire series out of them. You know, 13 episodes, but they're binge-watched. It's true. It's like watching a super long movie.
De Winter. Is the showrunner for that. This is the same guy that did the Spartacus series on Star.
That's right.
And he really knows how to develop villains. One of the best things about Star's Spartacus series was the villains were very fully realized. And it is marvelous the amount of time and attention they spend on Wilson Fisk in the first season.
Yes. Beautiful.
Oh, yeah. No, Wilson, I was delighted. Again, minor spoiler. I was delighted when I saw Fisk show up again in season two.
And they build on it. He's not just a cameo.
There is just no character that is the equivalent of the charisma, the cinematic presence of D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk in the second season of Daredevil until we get to Wilson Fisk.
And the cool thing
sequence
is
in the first season, there's a sequence of Wilson Fisk going through his morning routine, and it's wordless. He didn't say a word. But he goes through his morning routine. He makes his breakfast. He gets his food. He puts out the table. He gets his clothes out. He lays out. He gets the cufflinks. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very... controlling.
Yeah.
You could tell that's his world, his controlled world. And he's uncomfortable talking in big crowds and in big social circles. You could see he's not really enjoying being the center of attention in terms of having that whole, hey, Mr. Fisk, how are you? And welcome to the party. And he's just like, yeah, thank you. You guys have a good time. You know, whatever. But it's all an amazing chess game that he's playing with the world. He's got an amazing plan in the season one. And when it's revealed, when it comes out, and it's like, oh, you know, you've been plugged in this entire time. I mean, this is all one big amazing setup.
I was initially concerned just a little bit because I felt that they were doing a really excellent job of making him sympathetic. And I thought perhaps maybe a little too sympathetic.
Yes, that's right. And you're not the only one. Other people have voiced that. And that's the cool long game of this.
Right up until the point where he says, take your shot. And that's when you realize, oh, no. That's the Kingpin.
The culturedness of him was a little bit off. It was a little bit wrong. It was a little bit sensitive.
Right.
We get that in season two.
Even Denouncer himself says,
where you're waiting for the cigar to show up.
Right. He's not the kingpin yet. He's getting there.
Yes.
He's built into it.
They're playing the long game. They're doing the same thing with Karen's past.
Yes. And even Vanessa, and he had that conversation, Vanessa Fisk, the woman who will become Vanessa Fisk in season one, they're having a conversation, and she describes this over-the-top person that she saw with a white jacket and a cravat.
Yeah.
And they laugh about it. And if anyone who knows the comics, the kingpin in the
comics, that's exactly what
he wears. He wears this white jacket and this purple cravat.
And there's a great line in season two where he's in prison. It's a flashback.
Oh, he does, yeah. He says newbies wear white. That's right.
Wears white. Instead of the orange jumpsuit, he's stuck in a white jumpsuit.
Well, I totally think that Marvel is doing that correctly by having it all tie into their larger world. I'll tell you, in answer to the question you asked earlier as to why DC won't do that, let me go ahead and say this out loud, because a lot of people don't realize that at Warner Brothers, the film division and the television division are separate, equally contentious, acrimonious departments.
That's right.
They hate each other with the fire of a thousand sun. They actively try to outdo one another at every turn. They each regard the other as inferior. They each regard the other as uninformed and willfully ignorant. And that is why they cannot get it together with the properties. That's why things end up in development that seem at cross purposes at one another. That's why there is no way in hell that those quote-unquote TV actors will ever make it on the big screen.
Big screen.
There's not an executive over there that thinks even knows Grant Gustin's name. Never mind that he is the perfect Flash for his time and his place. Never mind that he absolutely embraces the heart of that character. They're going to cast Channing Tatum or whoever they get, and it's going to be a name guy because
Nicholas Cage.
Somebody else along those lines, and they're gonna be up, and they're gonna wonder why the internet doesn't like him as much, and then they're gonna go, well, the fans are stupid, they don't know anything, and that's where this acrimonious relationship happens, because they actively do not look at what the other side is doing and get mad when they're at cross purposes with one another.
And the sad thing is, I would love to see. Simply because I adore the actor. I have a huge man crush on Jason Momoa.
Mm.
I would love to see basically an aquatic Game of Thrones.
Yes.
You take Aquaman, you make it an HBO series or a Netflix series, and you make Aquaman the series with Jason Momoa and all of the Machiavellian court intrigues that would be involved in Atlantis.
And periodically they're attacked by pirates led by Black Manta.
There you go.
Because that's what he is. He's a pirate.
Yes, but it would be brilliant. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Instead of winter is coming, they could have, algae bloom is coming. That doesn't
there
sound
good. There you go. To have Momoa, glower and sneer his way through a series, I'd love it. I would love to see something like that. I actually like the casting of
Momoa as
Aquaman. I mean, we all know that they're really going for Namor. I mean, he looks like Namor.
I was
going to
say, he'd be better than Namor.
He's absolutely Namor. But that's fine. That's fine. Take him Aquaman, and he's still in Atlantis, and he's still the king, and there's still all kinds of cool shit.
He's still Arthur Curry, who was rescued in a lighthouse?
I think so.
And I'm even provisionally happy with Gal Gadot, but, that's neither here nor there.
She supposedly steals the show.
That's what I hear.
In terms of what the TV shows are for, we've just managed to get through Daredevil, and what's nice about this is, again, for those of you who want your series a little kinder and gentler, well, it's not going to be it's not going to lessen the tension. These are tense shows. These are dark, complicated Netflix series, but this is what's nice. There is a tangential link between season one of Daredevil and Jessica Jones, and there is a tangential link between Jessica Jones and season two of Daredevil.
Yes.
Now, it's obvious that they're chaining this stuff together with the intention of filling out the street level Marvel universe.
Yes.
Which I think is marvelous and will do them credit, because the build up to this is Power Man and then Iron Fist, and then they're going to do a series called The Defenders where these guys all get together. And you know, who knows what they're going to be fighting at that point. But at this point, I have to tell you, I trust what Marvel Studios is doing in terms of development pretty much implicitly.
Yeah.
I mean, well, because there's always some snarky website out there that goes, Guardians of the Galaxy, I've never heard of Guardians. This is clearly going to be the one where Marvel goes off the rails. And then the next year it's Ant-Man, are you serious? This is clearly going to be the one where Marvel goes off the rails.
Right, and Doctor Strange.
Right now, they're Doctor Strange. I don't care if Benedict Cumberbatch is in it because I have a crush on him. This is clearly going to be the one where Marvel, and there's a point in which you have to just go, No.
If Daredevil season 2 can survive what they did in the last several episodes still be considered, I accept that. That exists in the Marvel universe.
They
then
get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Because they haven't, if the worst movie out of that whole line of films so far has been Iron Man 2, that's a film that had we gotten that movie in 1994, we would all be on the moon. So if Iron Man 2 is the weakest link in the Marvel chain, I feel like they get a full pass until they totally screw the pooch. And they haven't yet. They just haven't.
They keep getting better.
I love what
they're doing aside
on television. You shut your mouth about Ant-Man.
Ant-Man wasn't bad. It didn't the arc like everything else did.
I will.
I have to jump in here on Mickey's side. I thought Ant-Man was fun. Did I think it was like, wow, there's a Marvel movie? No, not in the least.
The
villain was Dullesville. Ant-Man's powers were cool, and I loved Rudd in the role.
All right, guys, we're getting off track. To pull you back.
Ant-Man was just not, just didn't do it for me.
And it's also my job to remind you that it is the clock on the clubhouse wall is saying we're reaching the end of our session here at the Lobot Lounge.
And we reached it again where Mark was going, how dare you, guard, seize them!
No. But I'd like to put out a roundtable question and answer.
Yes.
We like to do at these wonderful gatherings. Let's say that Mongol shows up at your door with a Black Mercy in a package and it sticks to your chest, and you are the geek who has everything. You are the nerd who has it all, and you have you can pick a TV show, and it's any property, any comic book property ever that you want to see realized on a TV show, Netflix or network. Mickey Finn, you're up.
I refuse to choose because I'm torn between a black and white animated Cerebus, the first couple stories, not when it degenerated later, and bringing Middleman back.
Middleman?
The Middleman is awesome.
Right. That's fun.
And I'm also torn between Transmetropolitan, which is awesome, and Timely today.
I don't know that, but okay.
Yeah, it's a good.
Is it the, where is that, another independent?
Yes.
Well, Vertigo.
Okay. Mark, what about you? You are dreaming the dream of the just, and you can imagine any show.
In my world, we get the ongoing adventures of the Rocketeer.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, didn't see that one coming.
Oh, brother, you don't know. I love that Disney movie.
Yes.
For the flawed masterpiece that it is. And the only thing that it needed was 5 more minutes of him flying around doing Rocketeer stuff. And
a sequel.
And if I had a TV show that was even a season long, it would be basically going through the greatest hits of the 1930s and 40s pop culture. So, you know, and kind of in the way that Sky Commander and the World of Tomorrow went, you know, that was basically a Republic cliffhanger serial. If they had the money that they really needed to do all that stuff. Well, yeah. I would have given Bilson and DeMeo the money to do all that stuff. And oh yeah, you can use Doc Savage. And oh yeah, we're gonna put Lamont Cranston in the cult walk.
Yes. Ooh,
That's what nice. That's what I would do with my Rocketeer. I would spend all the money making sure that I could do those licensing crossovers, so that so that Carl Denham could give him a map and go, look, I got a baby Kong stuck in the cave over there, but I can't get anybody to go get it out. You know, that's that's my Rocketeer series.
And that's pretty spectacular.
And I will take all of your tributes online now. As we start the Kickstarter to make this happen.
All right, let's hold those tributes, folks, because here come mine.
All right.
I'm sleeping the sleep of the Black Mercy, and what I see is a Netflix series, a limited Netflix series, 13 episodes, that tell the tale and the adventures of one Mr. Jack Russell, werewolf by night.
And in that
universe, we can have Frankenstein's monster.
The living mummy.
You can have the tales of the zombie. Oh, we could have the man thing. Mm-hmm. We could have these people show up in these episodes. We could have Marvel's version of Dracula, who is terrifying.
That's so good, yes.
And so good. But Werewolf by Night, and I would love it if they just made him look just like he does in the comics. He looks like an Aurora monster model.
Would you, in the Dracula season two-part season finale, would you have Blade with a turtleneck?
Hell, why not? Why not? Yes, you would have Blade. And Jessica Van Helsing show up. Yes, you would.
You so complete me.
Werewolf by Night, and just the title, I could picture, I can close my eyes and see the opening credits and the moon and, you know, the dramatic music and just,
Mike storyboards where he's looking down at his hand as it's changing,
Yes, in the water, you know.
So good.
Yeah. Beautiful stuff. Mr. DiOrive, you are now Black Mercy'd.
I told you mine. Game of Thrones, Aquatic Game of Thrones.
Aquaman Atlantis Attacks.
You get an entire series, an adult, sophisticated series about Atlantis and Aquaman and all of that stuff. I mean, so much good stuff. I mean, the ocean has always been, just because I'm terrified of deep water, the ocean has always held the most fascination and horror for me. Like, if I could imagine the most horrible way to die, it would be eaten by a great white shark.
Right.
So
in the water.
Exactly, in the water. Where else?
As opposed to on land.
It's supposed to be in my shower, which, by the way, after I saw Jaws, I would wash my hair with my eyes open, because you knew that shark was going to come up out of that drain.
That's why you always have a surprise.
So the ocean is still that, if there is any part of our world that is still a mystery, that is still unexplored, it is the deep, deep oceans. And so just the storytelling potential and possibility of what could be down there.
Yeah.
Ancient civilizations, you know, strange Cthulhoid monsters, aliens, anything could be down there. That would be my dream.
Deep sea penguin.
It is a beautiful dream to have. Well, gentlemen, I'm afraid it's time. This is Channel LOLNG, now ending its broadcast day. Until next time we get together, this is Mark Finn saying,
so long, America, and we'll see you again.
Mickey Finn.
Wonder Twin Powers activate.
Aaron DiOrive.
Watch Gotham, folks.
And this is Don Pardo saying, good night.
Gentlemen Nerds is a production of Cloak & Dagger Studios, LLC. Music by Ben Gibbs. The sound editor is Michael Ashley Finn. Web design and cloakanddaggerstudios.com by Rustix Interactive. Promotional consideration by Arthur Curry's Curried Fish Stand.
Mark now hates you because you did not love Ant-Man. I just want you to know that. You are persona non grata.
I like Ant-Man.
What is it, you demented incubus? What?
That's it. But go ahead and close up your shop.
And the other thing is that for some reason, this is the season of hitting people in faces repeatedly.
Yeah, there was a lot of face hits.
Yeah,
there was. I must punch you in the face
many times. Or, you know, depending on the character, shoot you in the face.
And by the way, Blythe had the same complaint about Elektra, the actress who did it. Although she was great, you know, we liked the actress, but she had the same complaint that Joseph had with Gal Gadot in Wonder Woman. You know, first thing Blythe said when she saw her, she's like, oh my God, she's too skinny.
Well, see,
this girl's going to be kicking ass. She needs to be beefy.
Well, I think they were able to pull it off with the Caporetta or Cappuccino, whatever the dancing
thing is. Capoeira.
Capoeira. It's Caparilla.
Thank you.
Caparilla.
Oh, I thought it was Capoeira.
It's Caparilla, and the reason I know that is because my favorite Street Fighter character is Blanca, who is the maestro of Caparilla.
Ah.
I thought it was Capirotada, which is a Mexican dessert. But,
or Capoeira, actually.
Or
Capybara.
Capybara.
The largest rodent in the planet, that's right.
I will throw this rodent at you.
It's a big rodent.
Capybara is sword fighting, to be fair.